You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. There's really no way that any media outlet, regardless of the media, could miss the story that came out yesterday when the Supreme Court announced its decision on same-sex marriage, or miss, leading up to it, the opposition and the two sides of the debate. So how has the earlier media coverage been of the Supreme Court's announced decisions? Joining us to talk about that, Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
You say you have detected, you're kind of a ghost detector lately. You've detected one of the Get Religion's ghosts in the media coverage that might explain, in terms of a religious angle, why the court made the decisions it made and announced yesterday. What is it?
Well, there's something in the story itself that is clearly factual, and that factual element is linked to strong poll data, and so far I haven't seen this mentioned in any reports whatsoever. If you look, in effect, what I'm arguing is that what happened yesterday is in large part a Catholic story, and it's about a division among Catholics. Let me explain that briefly. We live in a nation where there's a strong belt of traditional religious people, roughly 20%, who strive to practice their faith, etc. There's another belt on the other, which have been getting lots of attention lately, the nuns, and the N-O-N-E-S, as opposed to the nuns on the bus, the N-U-N-N-S people. The nuns, the religiously unaffiliated, have been growing, along with a growing number of people who are openly atheist or agnostic. However, when you break this down, one of the most interesting things in American life related to social issues, whether it's abortion, same-sex marriage, etc., is the fact that the numbers for Catholics are fascinating. The small number of American Catholics who genuinely practice their faith, who go to Mass once a week or more, if you look at those people, they basically hold the teachings of their church to one degree or another. There are, in all things, there are exceptions, but it's hard not to see the pattern there. Meanwhile, Catholics who don't go to church very often, who are what often sociologists have called cultural Catholics, these people tend to disagree radically with their church on moral theology, and in particular, in recent years, on same-sex marriage. So all with that, those numbers are sound. The Pew Forum has reported them for years. Everybody kind of knows that, so much to the degree that people don't think about it that much. Now, what I simply pointed out was that when you look at the makeup of the court and you look at the votes on this decision, it's hard not to notice when you're dealing with a decision in which the only four people, you know, in the bitterly divided 5-4 vote, all four of the votes in favor of traditional marriage were cast by weekly mass level Catholics. People that if you read their biographies, if you read news coverage about them, these are pretty devout people. These are men who go to Mass on a regular basis. Meanwhile, you look at who wrote the majority decision, backed by another Catholic, who wrote the majority decision, and you're dealing with a progressive Catholic who is not a frequent churchgoer, has frequently clashed with his church on issues of moral theology, and there you have it. To some degree, the actual split in the Supreme Court boils down to a difference among Catholics between those that frequently practice their sacraments and those who don't. I simply think that that's a statistical, factual hook. I predict at some point somebody will write that story. Somebody will just will go back and take a look at the development of Justice Kennedy's thought on these issues all the way back into his grad school and law school days and his relationship to the church. And that's going to be a part of the story that we will get to eventually. I simply thought someone yesterday should have noted, you know, it would have only taken a paragraph or two, that you had a majority decision written by a progressive Catholic, and you had the four opponents were traditional church-going Catholics.
Is that, do you think the case can be made, or the journalism can be done to show that that's more than just a coincidence?
Well, I mean, I think that the facts to some degree speak for themselves, that the alignment is there. Some journalist might say, how dare you suggest that someone's level of religious practice has something to do with their intellectual beliefs. Yet, good grief, through history, that's just apparent. And in this case, in a subject where everybody knows that to some degree or another, we're debating issues that cannot be separated from religion, or if they can be separated from religion, then that's an issue that people are arguing about and discussing. There are people on both sides of that issue. Journalists who are interested in covering both sides of this story should be interested in those disputes, in those debates, and in those disagreements. Now, that brings us to the other issue here, which is, in this case, is the American press, the vast majority of the American press, is anyone actually interested in doing journalism on this particular issue that looks at the views of articulate people on both sides? Is that something the press is capable of at this moment on this issue? And I have to admit that that's where today, as a journalist, as someone who wants to defend the New York Times, someone who wants to defend the Washington Post, etc., it's kind of a dark day right now. It's very hard to make a case that anybody's trying real hard to do anything other than cheerlead on this issue, to use a phrase chosen by the media critic of the New York Times a couple of years ago.
Is that an issue of journalistic ability or an issue of journalistic will?
It's will, but we could be to the point where it's very hard to write a story if you can't even imagine that it exists. You know, a lot of people on the cultural and political right like to talk about conspiracy theories here, like there's a great media conspiracy to put down conservative people on this issue. Folks, you don't need a conspiracy if roughly 95% of the people in the room all have the same belief. To some degree, that's the opposite of a conspiracy. That's just the air people in the room breathe. And there's nothing a journalist at that point can do about it. There was kind of a highly symbolic thing that I put up today at Get Religion that I thought kind of summed it up. The Baltimore Sun, the newspaper that lands in my front yard, as I always like to say, that's, I live on the south side of Baltimore. This morning I noticed on their website, I'm going to go home and check my physical edition of the paper if it hasn't already been thrown out after me reading parts of it this morning. But in the online edition, when you clicked from the main story on the Supreme Court ruling, you went inside to a page that was formatted and dedicated, you know, to related topics and to a major story, et cetera, on this particular news development. I mean, it's a very common thing, right? Journalists develop packages of coverage and links. What I noticed was that you had the Baltimore Sun, of course, at the top in the logo, and the motto of the Baltimore Sun is Light for All. And on this page, the jump page for the coverage and for one of the major sidebars, Light for All had been printed in rainbow colors in the actual format of the page, which I took as kind of symbolic.
What did that visual, if you could put it into words or into a paragraph, as a journalist looking at the product of other journalists, in fact, really as the masthead there, what did that say?
Well, I mean, it either said this is an entire page dedicated to gay and lesbian coverage, or it just simply said, this is what the paper has supported in its editorial pages for, you know, for many, many years. Get used to it. We're a rainbow newspaper.
That kind of raises another question kind of that I had. I was watching this via television as the decision.
Something I never do.
And there were people running furtively out. It was actually rather amusing to watch people running out of the U.S. Supreme Court building with literally holding the decision over their heads.
Yeah.
And waving it in the air. And then the gaggle of people who had not read the decision telling us what it was and interpreting for us. But what one thing I noticed, and I mentioned it to my producer here, is that the adjectives that were being used by the reporters, not by the commentators or by spectators, but by the reporters, tended toward things like jubilant, happy. It's one thing to say momentous. It's another thing to say it's a jubilant day.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
No, I think that's the question I'm asking at this point. I think it is fair at this point to say, is this an issue on which the mainstream American press is now attempting to do basic journalism coverage, or has it moved into an advocacy journalism mode? You know, at Get Religion, we've made a big deal out of a speech that was given last year by Bill Keller, the retired editor of the New York Times. Just a couple of days after he retired from the New York Times, he went to the Lyndon Baines Johnson Library in Austin, Texas. And in this interview format talk, he was asked, does the New York Times slant its coverage to the left? I mean, an ombudsperson had written a piece that said, is the New York Times a liberal newspaper? And the lead was, of course it is. Well, Keller was asked about that, and explaining so, he said that it's not a liberal newspaper except on issues of culture and social issues. And he cited gay marriage as one, abortion, etc. But that on political issues, he considered the paper to be accurate and balanced and fair and objective. Now, of course, the point there is, anybody who knows anything about American politics for the last decade plus, especially in the wake of Roe v. Wade, what has been at the heart of most bitter American political debates over that period of time, if not social and moral issues such as abortion and gay rights? I mean, obviously you throw the Iraq War in there, you throw health care reform in there, but what was at the heart of the arguments about health care? Essentially, it was a battle over abortion funding and birth control. The minute you do that, you're now, according to Keller, you're back into issues on which the New York Times no longer pretends to be doing basic journalism. So I think many news consumers today have to be picking up their newspapers and picking up the remote control as they watch their TVs and saying, what precisely am I consuming at this point? Where do I go to get news coverage in which I'm going to hear informed, even sympathetic voices on both sides of this issue explain what they believe, why they believe it, and how in the future they might be able to have some sort of moderated, tolerant response that does not, you know, carve large segments of the body politic off?
Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Thursday afternoon, June the 27th. We're talking about media coverage of the Supreme Court's rulings on same-sex marriage. When we come back, he's talked about his reaction to, well, the masthead of the Baltimore Sun and its rainbow colors. That itself sent a message strong enough. What was beneath the masthead? I wonder, was Terry surprised by what he read there? We'll find out what it was right after this.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, is only $15.99. CPH.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage, the early media coverage of the Supreme Court's rulings on same-sex marriage. Terry Mattingly is our guest of Scripps Hour News Service and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, before the break, you were telling us about what you found on the masthead of the Baltimore Sun, your paper of record there. What did you find beneath the masthead in that top story on the Supreme Court decisions, and were you surprised?
Well, I was surprised. I mean, everybody, if you pick up your paper today, you probably have the main story from the front. And if it's a large enough paper that has some reporters to dedicate to this, probably somewhere in the paper you either saw a sizable chunk of the main story, or more likely you saw a sidebar, a smaller separate story that said something like, opponents of same-sex marriage vow to fight on. That would be like the typical headline. And there would be 10 inches of interviews with people who were upset about the decisions yesterday or had other comments to make. Now, I assumed the Baltimore Sun, being a very liberal newspaper, I was not expecting balance. I was not expecting fairness. I was expecting them to deal to some degree or another with one or two of the most newsworthy elements in Maryland life and politics related to same-sex marriage. And in this case, that would be two subjects. Number one is most of the debate in the state of Maryland, political debate about same-sex marriage, has boiled down to what percentage of African-American voters would move from being opposed to same-sex marriage to being either neutral or in favor of it. As a rule, in particular, African-American churchgoers in our state have overwhelmingly opposed same-sex marriage. That's a pattern that runs nationwide. It was part of the Proposition 8 voting out in California, where you had sections of Los Angeles that went 90% for Barack Obama and then also voted like 75 to 80% in favor of Prop 8's ban on same-sex marriage. African Americans, as a rule, do not see sexual orientation as the same as race. So I expected there to be some quotes from African American ministers, from others reacting to this. And I also thought that Archbishop Lori, the leader of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, which is the premier see of Catholicism in America, I expected Lori to be quoted, but in particular, I expected them to quote him about his real concerns about this issue, because he's the chairman of the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference Ad Hoc Committee on Threats to Religious Liberty. Religious liberty is what this guy is all about right now. So I pick up my paper today, and to my shock, no obligatory sidebar. No sidebar at all, at least not that I have found yet. Then I was also shocked, but not as shocked, that there were no major African-American religious voices quoted. And then, here's the biggie, in the main bar story about this issue, the opposition quote section was about maybe 30 words long, 50 tops, three sentences or so, and that included a quote from Lori. And in the quote from Lori, he just simply said, we believe this is a bad day for marriage, period. They did not quote his remarks and his prepared remarks about religious liberty and First Amendment issues and whether or not people who are opposed to same-sex marriage will be adversely affected and whether their institutions will be adversely affected at all. I think this boils down to the question of whether the press has decided to simply not cover stories featuring voices of people who see same-sex marriage as a religious liberty threat. Even though there are gays and lesbians who are concerned about that, President Barack Obama has repeatedly kind of verified that this is a point of discussion, because he keeps saying we'll make sure that what we do is not a threat to religious liberty, which implies that if you didn't handle this right, it could be a threat to religious liberty, if you get my point. Whereas Barack Obama concedes that religious liberty issues are a part of this discussion. So do some other voices on the left. Yet, I would urge listeners to pick up their local newspapers today and in the next couple of days, and look for evidence that the actions of the court could have adverse effects on the religious and First Amendment liberties of individual believers, and even in some cases the institutions that they're a part of.
Well, the term perfunctory comes to mind when it comes to that kind of coverage. What does it tell you that that at least its first story, its first main story, written on the reaction, or at least including the reaction of those who find the Supreme Court's decision troubling, to use Lori's term, what does it tell you that they gave it five lines there?
Yeah, perfunctory is probably a better word than obligatory, so kudos there for improving that. Well, here's what it says journalistically, just as a basic. It means that there was no one in the newsroom that when this broke, no one stood up at the Metro desk and said, hey, wait a minute. All of Maryland's debates about same-sex marriage pivoted on issues of religious liberty and conscience. Hey, our archbishop is the national voice of authority on that issue in the entire United States. We should have a strong story today on that angle because it's the Maryland angle. Nobody said that. And that seems to me not the only angle. I would not expect it to be the only angle on the following day. But it looks to me like right up front, someone in the newsroom should have just had the journalistic sense, the ability to connect the dots and say, hey, let's at least cover the Maryland angles of this story. The old saying goes, all news is local. Well, what's the local angle on the same-sex marriage and gay rights issues in Maryland? Obviously, gay couples is one. Obviously, gay immigrants is another valid angle. That's what they chose for their main sidebar. But at the same time, you would have to say African-American voters and religious people, and you would have to say Archbishop Lori must be covered.
See,
didn't get it done.
What I wonder in that vein is when that story is being written. Obviously, they have the material in front of them. What they consider to be relevant there, what a journalist considers to be relevant in a press release that he's got from Lori's office, that he most certainly has, if he's quoting from it, what he considers to be the real story there. I guess what I'm asking is not only the decision a story, but the reaction of those who oppose this decision an equally big story.
In other words, should journalists be covering the journalism of this?
Well,
is that what you're asking?
Well, what I'm saying is, with something as large as a Supreme Court decision like this, where you know in advance no one could be ignorant of the fact that there's opposition to same-sex marriage.
Right.
That opposition is as big a story as the court's decision.
No, it's in this case, I don't think anybody would say that on the first day afterward it's as big a decision. Like I said, as big a story. I stressed that I did not pick up the paper expecting to see 50-50 coverage on the day after. I think that would be highly unrealistic. And we'll all have to look at our publications for balance in the coming days. Nobody expects a newspaper to do a perfectly balanced presentation the day after a major story breaks. Let's face it, this was a huge win for the moral, cultural, and religious left. Huge victory. That was the main story. Yet, at the same time, there's this old saying in journalism, all news is local. And one of the main things that newspaper editors are supposed to do when huge national news breaks is think, what are the unique local angles? In other words, what have I got in my town that is national level on this story? And anyone who looks at Maryland with its powerful African-American voting culture and voting blocks would have to see that as a big issue. And second, you would have to look at it and say, like I said earlier, the Catholic voice on religious liberty is the Archbishop of our city. We need his views on that topic.
So with only a minute here, Terry, in a nutshell, what should we reasonably expect? Not what will they give us, but what should we reasonably expect as news consumers, the media to do in the next couple days to fill in the gaps that we already see in their coverage of the Supreme Court's decision?
I'm going to focus on your word reasonable. It's reasonable for them to do stories on a whole host of valid issues on the left and the right. I can honestly say that I was so disappointed in the first day coverage and so disappointed in some of the coverage running up to this that I'm willing to say I don't know what is reasonable to expect of the media, the mainstream press, at this point in time on this subject. I don't know what they're willing to do. I don't know what approach to journalism they think they're practicing. It's a pretty dark day. I don't know what's happening in journalism right now.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Okay.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time reviewing a movie. This one, they make the story again and again and again. This one, the latest incarnation of Superman, Man of Steel movie. The obvious connection that people often want to make with this particular character from comic book lore, Superman, kind of the superhero of all superheroes, is between the Man of Steel and the Son of Man, Jesus. That's the obvious connection. Does the movie attempt this in some way? Others have. And how does it fare? Pastor Ted Giese will be our guest when we review the movie Man of Steel in the last 10 minutes of Issues, Etc. Stay tuned.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of Issues, Etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending the faith, teaching the truth. Issues Etc.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
It was the day after Christmas in 1538 when family and friends who were gathered around Luther's table heard him say, "There is no finer gift that a parent can give to a child than an education in the liberal arts." For over 100 years, St. Paul's Lutheran School in Brookfield, Illinois, has been emphasizing the six chief parts and the seven liberal arts, providing classical education in the Lutheran tradition. Visit our website at spbrookfield.org or call 708-485-0650.